This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. In his new memoir, former NASA flight director Chris Kraft writes that a television camera almost didn't make it onto the Apollo 11 flight to the moon because it weighed too much. Now the new feature film, The Dish, fills in another little-known part of the story. It's about the small-town radio telescope facility in Parkes, Australia, affectionately known as The Dish, which was responsible for televising Neil Armstrong's moonwalk to the world. The film lays out the serious and hilarious snafus that almost prevented us from seeing that first step for mankind. Rob Sitch directed The Dish. His first film, The Castle, lampooned a middle-class Australian family. Here's a clip from The Dish. In this scene, the mayor of Parkes is hearing some gossip about the NASA representative sent to oversee the operation at The Dish.
How are the boys at The Dish?
Looks as they're raring to go.
And the American chap settling in?
I think so. Quiet fella.
Came in here yesterday wanting pretzels.
Pretzels? Yep. It's a world event.
Let's get to the story. Why was this radio telescope facility in Parkes, Australia, chosen to be part of the NASA team?
NASA made a big decision, and I still think one of the bravest decisions, and that is that they were not only going to land a man on the moon and get them back, they were going to televise it live. It was a very courageous thing to do, I think. But it necessitated having a very large radio telescope to receive what were, for the time, fairly weak signals. They're still not that many. There was one in Madrid they used, there's one in California, and they used Parkes because between Africa and America there's not much in between except the landmass of Australia. And then at the last minute they upgraded it to the prime receiving station.
What does that mean? What was their responsibility?
They intended, if all things went well, on the flight plan to use Parkes to receive the television pictures. So suddenly it became pivotal. It suddenly became very important. Suddenly more equipment arrived. Suddenly more exchanges were had between the two countries.
Now, why was this? It's a huge dish. As I see it in the movie, it's huge. It's the size of a football field.
Yeah, it's 210 feet in diameter. So to get a measure, we stood in the middle and effectively like tried to hit baseballs out of the dish, and it was very difficult. Very, very big. You can see it from 20 miles away and it just gets bigger. And as you drive up, you expect sort of fanfares and bugles to start sounding. But in actual fact, there's a sheep looking at you from the fence, you know, 10 feet away.
Why was this huge dish in Parkes, Australia?
Well, as personified in the film, the mayor was a very clever civic leader. And like civic leaders all over the world, they managed to pull things off that probably with 2020 hindsight, you probably, why the hell was that built there? A number of towns competed for it, but the basic driving force, and I'm going to get this totally wrong because I never read anything I believed, but I think after the Second World War there was an explosion in science, and you know it's worth remembering we just split the atom then, or we didn't, the Americans did, but. And so I guess science was exploding, people were wondering about the galaxies. This field of radio astronomy was really opening up. And Australia had a scientific organisation, and I think at the time they thought there would be these things everywhere. But I think that once they built a few, they realised you didn't need that many. In fact, it's still used to this day by NASA, by radio astronomers all over the world.
Was this a pork barrel project, as they call it, was this guy, this mayor, a real visionary?
I think if you did the DNA test on it, there'd have to be like 10% pork barrel, 10%, you know, there always is. But he was a visionary. I think he competed against other possible locations, and he got it there. And it's in the middle of nowhere for good reason, that you don't have cars and electrical appliances and all the things that can interrupt. Although cell phones have become a real problem. It was involved to a great extent with the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and so occasionally, what looked like extraterrestrial intelligence was just the neighbor on a cell phone.
So this small facility with a huge radio telescope in Parkes, Australia, was responsible for broadcasting the moon landing to the world.
Correct.
What went wrong?
It's in order of it. Armstrong decided to walk immediately. So that pulled the moonwalk forward about 6 hours, and everybody in Australia kind of relaxed or got disappointed. And then Armstrong and Aldrin couldn't get into their suits, so then the moonwalk got pushed back. It was like a kind of a farce there for a while. But unfortunately, the dish in Goldstone in California lost their picture, and suddenly it became critical for the dishes in Australia to actually get the picture and transmit it. But it was this weird period where the moon wasn't high enough for Parks to get it, but Armstrong was getting out of the module and he was about to walk. And at that period of time, a wind hit Parks at 65 miles an hour, and this was a completely dangerous level. And the dish should not have been pointing at the moon at this time. So you had this sort of confluence of a courageous act or stupidity, depending on which way you look at it, and this kind of farce while the rest of the world thought nothing was going on and we're just about to watch Armstrong. Now, in the film, you know, it's we condense the two. The true story is more bizarre. There was another dish in Australia down the road. I mean, could you believe it? That wasn't supposed to be pointing, you know, getting television pictures. They pointed at the moon because they thought Parks wouldn't be able to get it. They got a rudimentary picture. Parks against a wind hit Parks, you know, 65 miles an hour, and they weren't supposed to move the dish. But because there was no picture coming out of Goldstone, they decided to, and it cascades.
So the telescope could have collapsed.
Well, I don't know what.
No high wind.
Yeah, no engineer told me what could have fallen off its bearings, and the forces on it were enough to shake the entire building and make it jump a cog. So it's 1,000 tons. So you know, you'd be court-martialed in the scientific community if you did it today. That's for sure. And then a genius move that the guy made. The moon was still too low, and as it was rising, he did a manoeuvre. He used what's called an offset feed, and where it effectively uses only 2/3 of the dish, but it effectively lowers the pointing angle of the dish. And he thought about this in the midst of it, pointed lower, picked up the television pictures, informed Houston they had the pictures, and they switched to Parks almost immediately.
They came through in the clutch.
They did. It was like one of those, you know what, we went through it minute by minute and every single minute mattered. And you can't believe that. And I said at the time, why didn't they tell Armstrong to stop? Imagine that message. Look, you know, like in the football, can you just hold the third quarter because we're doing some ads for Procter & Gamble at the moment?
Did you talk to the astronomers who worked the dish during these 4 days of the moon landing?
Yeah, we did. And you know, it's a sad footnote, as the American who is in charge of the American side of things, a guy called Robert Taylor, only died recently, we heard. But a lot of them are still alive. And it's kind of cool to – a television station in Australia brought some of them back. And it was just like in the movie. They came back and looked at it and – all the same expressions as you see in the start of the movie. None of them wrote kind of books about themselves or this is what you do today, but they didn't. They accepted that they'd done something great amidst something that was much greater, and that was it.
How old were you?
I was 7, and it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Australia. And somebody asked me, has someone ever done a film about Apollo 11? And the answer is, to my knowledge, no. And it's good reason. It's the big story is just dominates you. And I think you've got to come at it through a small story and from somewhere else. Because I think it's a hard thing to – for Americans will make Apollo 13, but Apollo 11 looks like chest thumping. But when you see it done by another country and see it through their eyes, you know, you see the event, which I think unquestionably is the greatest moment in, you know, human history, or the greatest achievement. And that's how it was seen by the rest of the world.
What is wonderful about the movie is that you see it through the eyes of a number of different characters and different,
right,
of different ages. And one of my favorite is the little boy, the son of the mayor in the film.
Right.
He has a toy model of the lunar module. He knew everything technical about the operation. He watches the television coverage and explains to all the grown-ups all the acronyms that are being tossed around on TV. The moon landing had such a huge influence on kids of
you know,
boys
what? Yeah.
of that age.
Well, I was 7, and that's kind of autobiographical, that bit. It's impossible to overestimate the amount of press that was generated at the time. I mean, there were truck drivers that knew the flight plan of Apollo 11. So it's like when you watch the Olympics and you become an expert in diving or something, or ice skating. Everyone knew the stages. And as a kid, I remember the countdown. So, you know, and then, you know, growing up at that time, I thought everything in the world was possible. It's hard to be seven, see land man on the moon and think that, well, you know, we're going to have a cure for everything in about 3 years. That was the thinking.
So you were the kid flying the lunar module in front of every adult you could, find.
Yes, I was annoying. I admit it.
Did you dig up real television footage from the era, from Australian TV?
We did. It's so amusing. I think the contrast of 1969 is extraordinary. You had enormous changes around the world, a very tumultuous time, but still incredible conservatism, and then also juxtaposed against incredible technological advances, very rudimentary electronics, and television is an example of that. You had, in Australia, we had people hosting programs that looked like, you know, it looked like kids would do it. 11-year-old kids would host programs today. And we went back and looked at that. It amused us no end. And there was one thing that we show in the film where there is a huge Earth, and about 1 foot away there is a huge moon. And the presenter warns the viewers, and I must warn you, these are not to scale. And I mean, it was kind of that school principal view of instructing viewers, we must warn you.
Rob Stitch is my guest. He's the director of the new film, The Dish, about Australia's role in the Apollo 11 moon landing. We'll talk more in a minute.
Sure.
This is Fresh Air. Back with Rob Stitch, director of the new film, The Dish, about how a telescope in a small Australian town ended up bringing the television coverage of the moon landing to the world. Now, did you see the comedy in this story right away, this idea that of the Australian chip on the shoulder, that here is Australia's moment on the world stage and we could blow it?
Well, yeah, because when we started reading about this huge radio telescope, one of the first stories we read was that when the Governor General, which is like the nominal head of state, like the president in Australia, came to visit for the grand opening, the control desk malfunctioned. And so one of the guys got underneath and hot-wired the desk. So our first image of the dish was a guy underneath hot-wiring it like you'd steal a car, while out the front a guy in full British dress regalia and a whole entourage was standing there saluting the dish as it dipped, and the guy's hot-wire. And that came up time and time again. They were isolated. They're near this town, but they're out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of farming land. And even when we were out there, it promotes a kind of a mischievous... The isolation gives you a mischievous bent. And we went up on the dish and we thought, cricket is an Australian national game. You know, you could play baseball up there as well. It looked like the perfect place to play a pickup game. And everyone solemnly looked at us and said, oh, no, this is a highly developed scientific instrument. No one would ever do that. So we put it in the film, and then after the film came out, a few of them admitted to us, oh, yeah, we used to play.
The truth comes out.
The truth comes out. There's lots of that. That I think something about the isolation produces that kind of larrikinism.
Now, to film The Dish, did you have to move it? Did you get the cooperation of staff of The Dish today?
Yeah, we did. It's still used 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
For what?
To search for extraterrestrial intelligence, for NASA. NASA use it just about on every mission. And they still map the galaxies. They search for black holes. It's amazing how many things they do there. So we had to – some German astronomers who were looking for black holes while we were there had it at night, and we had it for the day. And it was a funny some kind of way to get – as I get to work with a coffee and drive up, and the German astronomers would be getting on little bikes to ride away. And they go, yes, we're off to bed. Yes, good luck with your film. And then later on in the day they go, yes, we're back to look for the black holes. Are you finished? But it was kind of cool, yeah, to have a huge radio telescope for 2 weeks.
For the set of the movie, for the control room of this radio telescope, did you get stuff from NASA, the machines? Because this is all pre-technology, pre-modern computer. It looks like ancient reel-to-reel machines.
Well, I think it's one of the most fascinating backstories to this film is we didn't want it to look like a Star Trek set, you know, with three flashing lights and one button. So... We rang around and someone said, oh, I've got stuff that will look very much like that. It turns out that it was some of the original equipment and it was left in Australia when everyone went back to America. But they said, don't sell it we just don't need it, but don't sell it.
Was it just too big to carry?
Yeah, it's big and heavy Hewlett-Packard computer equipment and S-band receivers, whatever. I don't even know what they call them. Anyway, we installed it in, turned it on. It still works 30 years later. And someone said, look, came around the back, and I didn't believe the NASA story. And he said, look under here. And there was a NASA barcode. And it turns out that one of the first uses of barcodes, and someone said barcodes were even invented for the space program. And there it was, a NASA barcode. And this was the original equipment that had transmitted the pictures. So it was kind of, that side of the authenticity was easy.
Rob Stitch is my guest. He's the director of the new film, The Dish, about Australia's role in the Apollo 11 moon landing. You and your production team, who've worked on this film, started out together in radio.
We actually, the first job, we were at college and we did a comedy review show. And we were young. We thought, what the heck, let's take a year off and tour it around the country. And a fellow from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation saw it and said, do you want to do a television show? So we were kind of 20 with our own years old with our own television show. And it was after that that someone from a radio station said, well, how about you take another year off and do a radio program? And so that it kind of, then we never stopped and we kept doing things and chopping and changing. And
this is the four of you?
Yeah.
Together on the radio interviewing people?
Yeah, we sort of do it as we're a wolf pack, I think, officially.
How pleasant to be a guest.
You know what? It actually works. It works really well because it's like a conversation with a special guest there as well. It's like a friend's come over to your house. And so we took that idea onto television in Australia, and I think it's ended up being a really big hit there. But we still get the reaction that, you know, it's cheating. You're not allowed to just talk on television. But, of course, you can. People said, oh, no, that's radio. You can't do that on television. But people enjoy it just as much.
What kind of guests do you get on? And I get the impression that you could even get a prime minister.
Yeah, well, we do and have done. And
the Prime Minister of Australia came on your show?
Who came on recently? The Leader of the Opposition, the Treasurer, the Deputy Prime Minister. Funnily enough, the politicians are the most nervous because it's not adversarial. They are terrified that they have to show something of themselves.
They have to be spontaneous.
They have to be themselves. And they don't want to be themselves. But we'll have anybody. I mean, you know, Jerry Lewis came. We'll have him. Katie Lang is singing. In fact, the American guests love it possibly the most because we don't pre-interview them or as you would do on a big Tonight Show here. And so I think they find it a relief for us to say we don't require you to do anything. You don't have to tell us, you know, three funny anecdotes and then we're going to plug your album and then go. It's much more relaxed than that.
Your first film was The Castle. It's about the happy, in quotation marks, Kerrigan family. Their biggest moment is when their pretty daughter Tracy is on The Price is Right television show.
That's right.
And they do have a son in jail, but they don't let that get them down.
No, it doesn't get them down.
You have a lot of fun with the parody in that film. Did you draw on any of your own family story?
Oh, I did a lot because my father, I mean, when you're 16, you realize your parents aren't perfect and then you start to turn against them. But when you're 13, I thought my father had done no wrong, but for a good reason, and that was he thought he was the luckiest person in the world. And I can't tell you the effect that someone like that has on you. So my mother would cook a meal and put it down the table. He would stop. Look at the meal, look at us, like in stunned disbelief and say, boys, why would you go to a restaurant when this keeps coming up night after night? And she, what is it, Beryl? And she'd say, oh, chicken, but you've done something to it. Oh, I put a bit of seasoning. Oh, that's it. That's the secret. And he lived his life like this. And so I used to regale my friends with these stories about the father that thought he was the luckiest person in the world. And so when we were coming to put a character into it, we gravitated towards that character.
Do you get any angry feedback from Australians about a film like
can I
say,
you,
The Happy Kerrigan Family? You're making fun of us, and now this film is about how we almost screwed up the coverage of the moon landing.
It's really interesting, and I hope like a master student does a thesis on it one day, because here's the paradox. Well, it's not a paradox to me. Occasionally, but only occasionally, writers would write and go, oh, it's patronising the working class. And in actual fact, they're being patronising. The film was the number one film when it was at the box office. It was the number one film on television. I think it's second only to Sound of Music. And when it was repeated a year later, it became the number one film again for that year on television. And it was the number one rented video. And people, This is what happened, is that people saw someone from their own street as the hero in a film. They know what's right and wrong. And also, there's a protective delusion there that we all have too. One of the people that was a neighbour of mine that we based something on, and I thought she'd spot it. And she walked up to me one day when I saw her and she went, I have to have a word with you. I've got neighbours just like that. Now, you know, I think we see the best things, we don't see the worst. But yeah, it's not. I think in the end, the film is interesting because, and I think we knew it would happen this way, is in the end the guy, because he's got a really core part of life worked out. You start off thinking you're smarter than him, and you end up realizing you're dumber than him.
Rob Sitch directed the new film The Dish. It opens this month in theaters nationwide. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.